This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
You're listening to a podcast from the South China Morning Post.
Hello, and welcome to the China Geopolitics Podcast. I'm Chad Bray here at the South China Morning Post in Hong Kong. And this week, there's one word you can use to sum up the focus of the geopolitical relationship between China, the United States, and Europe, and that one word is Taiwan. We're going to hear from our Washington bureau chief, Rob Delaney, about statements made this week about Taiwan. We're also going to hear a bit more about a story that made headlines last week that seems to be coming back into view. That was the launch of a vehicle which orbited the Earth and returned to land. No, William Shatner was not on this one. Beijing says it was a space vehicle they were testing, but more and more American sources are saying it was a hypersonic missile test. And if it's true that all roads lead to Rome, then our European correspondent Finbar Birmingham is definitely in the right place. He's there to cover the G20 meeting and will give us a sense of the mood in the lead up to this weekend's meetings, as well as what lies ahead. It's a Halloween weekend ahead of us, so let's head off in search of tricks or treats. Rob Delaney is our Washington bureau chief and joins us now. Hi, Rob.
Hey, hi, Chad. How are you?
Good. Welcome. Rob, a week ago as we recorded this podcast, we included a last-minute reference to a passing comment from Joe Biden about Taiwan. By Monday, that had been walked back, but here we are on Friday, and there's been, shall we say, a number of developments. So let's start with a statement from U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. Can you unpack that for us? You know, what he said about Taiwan and the United Nations this week?
Well, I would say that it's very similar to what we've heard before. Whenever Taiwan comes up, and doesn't matter if it's a State Department press briefings or whether it's White House press briefings, whenever that comes up, it's Taiwan is a model of democracy and protection of human rights and transparency and on and on and on. I mean, this position about Taiwan is no surprise. But we do have this very lengthy statement that's been introduced. It's been issued outside of the normal press conference kind of milieu where those questions get thrown at them. It was very proactive to have this statement come out. And it's interesting that this statement comes out at this moment when we've got the PLA fighter jet sorties sort of going around the island, and of course a lot of other developments which we can go into. It's about the whole debate about whether or not Taiwan will eventually be allowed to participate in some way, shape, or form within the UN context. And of course, we all know China's position on that. Absolutely not in any way, shape, or form. So this is just another one of these areas where you've got Taiwan as a major sticking point in U.S.-China relations. What to make of the fact that they're issuing that now as a statement, but not really discussing it out loud and not actually voicing these comments? It's not clear. It might just be another example of this ambiguity that we always hear about in terms of the way that the U.S. government articulates its position around Taiwan.
And at this point, have we heard any response from Beijing? Has there been anything said by the Chinese ambassador to Washington?
The Chinese ambassador referred, when that statement came out, I believe it was, what was it, about 2 days ago, the Chinese embassy referred us to statements that they had previously made. And one of those statements was that the Taiwan authorities are, quote, brown nosing other countries in order to get some kind of legitimacy. And they issued the standard warnings, of course, about Taiwan separatism, Taiwan independence and whatnot.
Rob, it's quite interesting that this has come in the same week that the EU is talking about having its own meetings with Taiwan. But also, at the same time, we have an issue of U.S. troops in Taiwan. Just a few weeks ago on this podcast, we talked to Owen Churchill, and he talked about the presence of U.S. Marines in Taiwan to train soldiers using equipment as being not a huge secret, something that, you know, pretty much people knew in Washington and in Taiwan. But somehow it's back on the front page. We've had the Taiwanese president mention it.
Yes, she was very direct about saying in her interview that, yes, there are troops in Taiwan. So that itself, the fact that she confirmed it, was very significant. Again, coming back to the idea about the ambiguity about the about what's going on there, she then tried to play it down a little bit by saying, well, it's not as many as people think. So, but we'll never get an exact number on this. Again, it's important to keep in mind that I don't think it's a big surprise that there's some form of military presence, of American military presence in Taiwan. No one was sure, are these just advisors? Are there actual Marines on the ground in Taiwan? We still don't know exactly what that is, but this does take us a step further, of course, to get the leader of Taiwan saying that and confirming it to the international media.
And, you know, what does this say about sort of the, quote, strategically ambiguous policy that the U.S. has had towards Taiwan? It certainly seems like it's less and less ambiguous as we're seeing, you know, more public statements about troops.
Well, I guess I would say, look at the way the ambiguity is still there. Let's be clear about that. And we see that in the way that President Biden said very definitively yes when he was asked, would the U.S. defend Taiwan? Then they walk it back. So ambiguity will it does appear that the only way that we'll ever know exactly what the American government's, what the Pentagon's plan would be is in the event of some sort of military attack on Taiwan. I don't think we're ever going to know for sure what exactly the U.S. government's plan for Taiwan would be in that sort of scenario until it actually happens. So, of course, there are a lot of anti-China hawks, particularly in Congress, that push for some sort of move away from this policy of strategic ambiguity towards Taiwan. But it doesn't matter. We've heard this before, and it doesn't matter whether you have a Democratic administration or Republican administration. U.S. presidents are very reluctant to show their hand on that, and they're very reluctant to say anything beyond what the Taiwan Relations Act stipulates, which is that the U.S. government is required by law to support Taiwan's defense capability. And that's as far as they will go. That's as concrete as we will get. And it leaves open the question, well, what does supporting Taiwan's defensive capability means? Is it really just missiles and guns? Or is it, okay, we're going to bring the 7th Fleet into the Taiwan Strait and start launching our own fighter jets? We just don't know.
Against the backdrop of all of this, we have the G20 coming up this weekend, and wanted to ask you if you could give us a little bit of a preview. What does Biden hope to accomplish there, and particularly when it comes to U.S.-China relations? You know, what's on the agenda?
Well, overall, Biden wants to show up. He wants to certainly take advantage of the fact that China's President Xi Jinping will not be there physically at the event. He wants to project an image of global leadership because the idea of American global leadership has become more tested than it ever has been as China has become much more powerful economically and militarily. Now, what does that mean in terms of the actual agenda items? Well, they're going to bring up the global minimum tax rate, which the OECD had passed back at several months ago. So there are items like that. There are there will also be items regarding COVID, certainly a COVID strategy. We saw, for example, the Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen issuing a joint statement with Indonesia's finance minister, Sri Mulyani, earlier this week, which is very interesting. And that was a call for some sort of financial facility that governments, that the countries could tap in the event or whenever the next pandemic hits. And I think the significance of that statement coming out earlier this week is that it shows solidarity between the US and a very significant member of the G20, Indonesia. It's one of the largest developing economies. It's this sort of, traditionally it's been very non-aligned for Washington to show solidarity with a country like Indonesia is very important. So overall, Biden wants to show that he is in charge, that the U.S. is trying to take the lead in looking out in pushing an agenda that will be in the best interest of not only the U.S., but countries like Indonesia and all of the members of the G20.
So, Rob, you mentioned earlier that Xi Jinping was not going to be there in person. Who is going to be there? Do we have a sense about the China delegation? And also, is she going to be there on Zoom?
She will, in fact, be there on Zoom, but physically present at the meeting will be Foreign Minister Wang Yi. He'll be going instead. They're going to need to have some kind of presence on the ground because, as we hear so many of the analysts, as they talk about G20, the one point that you hear so often is that it's difficult to get things done unless you're there in the room, unless you're able to read the room, unless you're able to look people directly in the eye. That's how the most important things get done at these meetings. So China would certainly have to have someone. They couldn't rely solely on Xi Jinping zooming into the meeting.
And, you know, while this is going on, talk of China's hypersonic missile has reentered the conversation. You know, I'm certain it's something that they'll want to talk to Wang Yi about. But, you know, who is talking about this? And why is a phrase sort of being bandied about, Sputnik moment, about this?
Because apparently this missile test took many people by surprise. And it comes in the midst of a debate that we've been hearing, where we've heard Pentagon officials addressing, for example, the Senate Armed Services Committee, talking about how concerned they are about the amount of progress that China has made militarily in recent years. And several months ago, when we had one of these hearings, that was specifically about missiles. So the Pentagon is concerned about how advanced and about how precise Chinese missiles are becoming. And then bang, you've got this word of this hypersonic missile test, this missile that they basically send around the globe. And it didn't hit its target, but I think it was something like 39 kilometers off target. But still, when you consider that it circumnavigated the globe at hypersonic speeds and still came that close, of course, that's cause for concern at the Pentagon.
Again, another way that the U.S. is concerned about sort of the growing military presence and ties that they've targeted Chinese companies that they say have military ties. One of them is China Telecom. We saw them ban China Telecom and a number of companies from being traded in the U.S. and being held by U.S. investors. But now the FCC this week has come along and banned China Telecom from offering services in the United States. I mean, this almost feels like a throwback to, you know, the Trump administration and a number of things we saw towards the end of that administration. Why are they doing that now?
Well, this is kind of the end point of a process that was started actually under the Trump administration. So it was last year that the Federal Communications Commission notified China Telecom Americas and also which of course is the U.S. unit of China Telecom, but the same U.S. unit for China Unicom, and then there's another telecom company that is actually owned by the CITIC Group, which of course is linked directly to the central government in China. So all of these companies were all put on notice by the FCC that they would have to prove to the U.S. government or to the FCC that they posed no threat at all in terms of what they might be doing with the data of their of those using their services in the U.S. And so that was last year. I forget exactly which month it was, but I believe it was actually August last year. And so what the FCC was saying in their regular open meeting that we had this week was that the answers, the responses were not satisfactory. The FCC was not convinced that they were not a threat. So that was it. The China Telecom Americas has 60 days to end their telecom services in the U.S., which are not actually significant. A lot of the users tend to be those traveling from China who bring their phones and want to use the same company that they use back home while they're in the U.S. But significantly, though, those other two Chinese telecom companies what we learned at that hearing was that they will also they're also very likely to suffer the same fate. So the FCC chair in the meeting said that they also plan to take action on these other two companies. So we're likely to see that happen.
And Rob, could you update us on sort of where things stand with some of Biden's China policies? I know a lot of focus in the U.S. right now is on the infrastructure bill and how that's going to pass. And you know, is it going to include sort of the climate, you know, kind of initiatives that the progressives want?
Biden's China policy has not changed since he's entered the White House. I mean, he was very adamant that he wanted to see Congress pass this legislation that we saw the Senate pass a few months ago, which is in the form of the Innovation and Competition Act of 2021, which a lot of people really label as sort of a national industrial policy aimed at subsidizing or making really hundreds of billions of dollars available to companies to develop advanced technologies. This is in particular, in reaction to the advances that China has made in these areas. The problem that he's facing now is that there's so much acrimony over the other domestic agenda items, in particular the infrastructure spending bill that he wants to get passed, and also the climate legislation and social spending legislation that he wants to get passed. That what seemed to be a lot of momentum in Congress to get these particular China-related bills passed is really taking a back seat. So it seemed like there was a lot of momentum. It seemed like there was that this would get done, that these bills would wind up on Biden's desk quite quickly. What happened was it did pass. The Senate's version passed. The House version is languishing right now, again, because there's so much discussion and so much infighting, even within the Democratic Party itself, about these other domestic agenda items. So not sure how that's going to pan out. At this point, really, Biden's main hope with respect to China is, again, to show up at the G20, to show that it is in charge and to really show that it can lead globally every bit, if not better, than China can.
Thanks, Rob. It's going to be a busy weekend for you and the team following the G20, following the beginning for COP26 in Glasgow. So thanks again. We'll follow your analysis on SCMP.com.
Thanks, Chad. Good talking to you.
As critical news stories emerging from China continue to shape lives and business around the world, the weekly SCMP Global Impact Newsletter brings you expert analyses and insights on the economics of COVID-19, society, technology, and the environment. Sign up to receive your weekly email at scmp.com/newsletters.
Finbar Birmingham normally speaks to us from his stately Brussels residence, but this week he's in Rome as the G20 circus rolls into town. Hello, Finbar. Welcome.
Hey, Chad. How are you?
Good. Thanks for joining us. Now tell us first off, where exactly are you right now and what's going on?
Well, I'm sat in a hotel lobby, tried to find a quiet space to speak to you. I'm in Rome, as you said. I've just walked from my own hotel to another hotel where I'm attending an event ahead of the G20 this weekend. And the whole city seems to be crawling with police, as you might expect when there's a big summit like this. Everywhere they have a heavy security presence. But, you know, it's a nice, crisp autumnal morning here in Italy. I'm not complaining at all.
And I think there was some anticipation of protest in the area. Have you started to see some of those ahead of the G20?
There's a big protest tomorrow. Environmental campaigners, anti-globalization campaigners, the sort of usual crowd that follow these things around, they'll be kicking off tomorrow in the main square. And today, this morning, we've got a sort of a shadow summit, as they're billing it, organized by the Interparliamentary Alliance on China, which is a hardline group of legislators who are calling for tougher policies on China. They're going to have a sort of side summit, which I'll be attending, and I'll be sort of looking for some colorful updates from that.
So, Finbar, before we really delve into the G20, I wanted to start with the stories that you've been filing recently about the EU and Taiwan. Could you tell us a little bit more about what's going on?
Yes, Chad. Just a wee bit of background first. The Taiwan issue has overtaken Hong Kong, Xinjiang, and other China-related issues to be the biggest topic here in Europe, and I think in America too, in the West generally, the biggest China-related topic in the headlines. And just generally in sort of political circles, Taiwan seems to be the thing that people are really focused on. Last week, we saw the European Parliament for the first time adopt a paper, a policy report on Taiwan, which is not binding, but it essentially makes a list of recommendations to the European Commission and member states for their own policies on Taiwan. This was met furiously by the Chinese, of course, who said that it was interfering in their domestic affairs. We had a small exclusive last week with we had a letter that the Chinese ambassador in Brussels had sent to the head of the European Parliament, urging him to intervene in this vote. So they're not happy about that. And then this week, another story we had was that the European Parliament, there will be a small delegation of MEPs going to Taiwan next week, about seven legislators traveling to meet with senior Taiwanese officials. And this comes on the heels of a sort of flurry of diplomatic activity. This week alone, we've got Taiwanese Foreign Minister Joseph Wu traveling through Europe. He's been in Central and Eastern European countries of Czech Republic, Slovakia, I think Lithuania. He's going to Brussels, and he's going to be addressing this summit that I'm attending today by video link. There was some speculation that he would be attending in person, but that's not happening. I think that the Italians were not very keen for him to travel, because don't forget the Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi will be attending the G20 in Xi Jinping's stead. So to have the foreign ministers of the Republic of China and the People's Republic of China in the same European city at the same time might have been a little bit awkward. So this is the sort of the state of affairs. The Taiwanese issue is huge in Europe now. It seems as though, you know, this is one issue where politicians and governments maybe feel they can make some impact. I think there's a sense that on the issue of Hong Kong and Xinjiang, there's very little they can do that would materially change the situation. And China is going to go forward as it sees fit. Maybe there's a chance that they may be able to have some influence on the situation involving Taiwan. Not quite sure if that's the case, but certainly that seems to be the thinking.
Now, Finbar, let's turn to the G20. Rob Delaney spoke to us earlier on the podcast, and he was saying that U.S. President Joe Biden is eagerly pushing his idea of a global corporate tax. What else are you hearing about some of the different agendas that are being pursued, particularly by the Europeans at the G20?
Europeans are very focused on climate issues, as you may not be surprised to hear. They're really pushing for a deal on climate finance, which looks like it may not be achieved. There's also, pressure to commit to more stringent global warming targets, as outlined in the Paris Agreement 5 years ago. They want to make sure that countries are committing to go closer to the 1.5 degrees of warming rather than the under two degrees of warming that some have been pursuing. There's pressure to bring forward the targets of net neutrality and of zero emissions. So the EU is, as you, you know, the EU always is very focused on these issues. There's going to be some negotiations about coal. Of course, we know that China has committed to ending financing coal-fired plants overseas, but there's still a lot of coal being burned in China. So can the others pressure China to make decisions, tough decisions on those fronts? We'll see. I mean, a lot of this stuff has already been decided. The negotiations have been going on for months. Xi Jinping isn't attending, as I mentioned previously. We were speaking yesterday with EU officials who were saying that they're not too concerned about the lack of presence. Putin isn't here. The Mexican president isn't here. We also don't have the Japanese prime minister here. So there's a few of them that haven't attended. They said that those nations that haven't attended have got perfectly capable negotiating teams. They're not too concerned by their lack of presence. And of course, for a lot of these climate issues that the European Union is pushing China on, China has great self-interest in doing this anyway. So the arguments that I've been listening to over the last couple of weeks are that the best form of pressure that they can exert on China is to improve their own practices, because it's very much a sort of competitive area as well. So, you know, China wants to be seen as a global leader. It wants to be seen as a legitimate political system. And so if China wants to ensure that, then the best way to do it is to lead by example. So that applies to the European Union and the United States too. They can, you know, can pressure China perhaps best to act by leading by their own examples.
Yeah, and whenever it comes to big gatherings like this, there's always, you know, not only the formal statements that come out from these meetings, but there's the gatherings they're having on the sidelines. We often hear about them much later. Can you give us a little color about how this is going to work, how you'll be able to cover something like this on the ground?
Yeah, it remains to be seen. I mean, there are quite stringent COVID-19 restrictions. I've had to do a test yesterday. I have to do another one tomorrow. There's a whole lot of this going on. So I'm not sure how much access the press will have to the actual groups and to the actual leaders. Probably not great access, but there are huge teams that accompany these leaders about the place. It's not just the heads of state that travel to these meetings. They have Sherpas negotiating months in advance. They also have huge teams of aides and assistants. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to get wee bits of snippets. And back to the point about some of the top leaders not being in attendance, I think one of the things that they will miss out on are those informal catch-ups with their peers. You know, I know that the US has been very frustrated at Xi not attending because they're keen for FaceTime between him and Joe Biden. So those informal channels of negotiations and of discussions are often more important than the very rigid round-the-table negotiating sessions. So, you know, that might be a sort of opportunity missed.
Yeah, and maybe Wang Yi can hand his phone over to President Biden to have a quick discussion. Finbar, thanks so much for joining us. We'll look forward to seeing all of your coverage over the weekend and your analysis on scmp.com.
No problem. Thanks a lot, Chad.
That's all we have on this Friday before Halloween. It's going to be a very busy weekend with the upcoming G20 meeting, as well as COP26 climate summit, where people are saying this may be our last chance to save the planet. So stay tuned to scmp.com to see all the news, analysis, and in-depth reporting from our correspondents in Washington, in Beijing, and this time in Rome. We'll look forward to seeing you next time. I'm Chad Bray. Thanks for listening. Have a great weekend.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.